the situation, to get honest with yourself, and to start thinking about your options. If you're saying, I'm okay, but you're saying that because you've compromised, then you need to know that. To help you know that, as you progress through this audiobook, it's going to be highly interactive and directly connected to your own life experience. Let's make a deal before we even start. As we move forward, you absolutely must deal with nothing but hard, objective fact. As you address the question of you, I'm challenging you, starting now, to stop dealing in opinions or assumptions and start dealing in facts. Now, that may sound easy, but you need to recognize that when it comes to dealing with yourself, all of your momentum may be the other way. It may have been years since you dealt only in facts. Remember, a lie unchallenged becomes the truth, no matter how far off the mark it is. You've either been told or told yourself some of this crap for so long, you just automatically believe it. That would never happen if you required yourself to deal only with the facts. For example, no one could ever convince you that you're a thief, because factually, you know better. You know, as a matter of indisputable, objective fact, that you do not steal stuff, period, end of discussion. You can simply and unequivocally reject that accusation because you have the data, and whatever someone else might think doesn't change it one whit. As a result, it's a piece of information that never gets a foothold in your self-concept. Being a thief will never become part of your personal truth. But suppose someone confronts you about some aspect of yourself that is not so objective and easily measured, such as your value, your worth, your desirability, or your sensitivity. Those things are not nearly so cut and dried. I can't show you a quart of worth or a pound of your value. Whether it is you or someone else that is opining that you, for example, are worthless, you have to know the facts or you're dead meat. If you don't have the absolute bottom line scoop on the real deal, you'll go for the con job like Jesse went for the train. Through some bizarre logic that will never cease to amaze me, I watch people get suckered time after time. Some jerk, aka boyfriend, mother-in-law, boss, skinny friend, etc., will level some vague and unfounded criticism, and because we haven't done the work to amass the facts, we buy into it and stick it right dead center in our self-concept. We even do it to ourselves with our own opinions. In examining your self-concept, then, you need to be real clear about what is fact and what is not. Opinions are only opinions, and opinions can be changed. What I want to help you do is stop dealing with opinions about yourself and instead get in touch with the facts about yourself. Once you know the facts, you'll engage the world in an entirely different way. You'll stop saying to yourself, I have to earn my right to be here by being clever, rich, funny, pretty, or something else. It may take you some time to see that or not, but I know who I am, and I know that if you know me, then we are good to go. So I'm challenging you to start being skeptical of familiar patterns, familiar information. Together, let's understand what has distorted you so that we can challenge those things. Let's begin with some universal facts. Fact. Every one of us, you included, has within us everything we will ever need to be, do, and have anything and everything we will ever want and need. God is wise in so many things that we don't see. I strongly believe that He starts out each person with everything they will ever need to successfully fulfill their role. We have the tools, we have the ingredients, we have all the things that we need to get out in the world and live as our authentic self. And for each of us, that set of gifts is uniquely different. In the field of industrial psychology, we often deal with the challenge of achieving the proper man-task interface. The objective is to get the right person doing the right job. Two people of equal intelligence, for example, might have very different results when performing the same job. The reason lies in differing core traits that exist at the level of their authentic self. Even though they are of equal intelligence, one matches up to the specific requirements of the job and the other simply does not. If you are struggling in any aspect of your life, career, relationships, finances, family, or feelings and expectancies about self, it is entirely possible that the problem is not with you, but with your personal man-task interface. You may, in fact, be pursuing people, goals, objectives, or experiences of self that are incongruent with your authentic core. Fact. Your authentic self is there. It has always been there, and it is fully accessible to you. You are not the exception to this fact. There are no exceptions. Your particular traits and characteristics, and your store of accurate, undistorted knowledge, are what define you and differentiate you from every other human being in the world. This distinction of you is true, however, if and only if you live a life in which everything that is uniquely you is allowed to come out. You must seize every genuine characteristic that is you and allow it to take center stage in your life. And it can be done. Rediscovering the authentic self is not some esoteric, mystical work that can be done only by some philosophers on a mountaintop somewhere. It's a job that can and must be done by you. You can't be you if you don't know you. Fact. The self that now runs your life didn't just happen. It is the result of, one, certain key events that you have experienced in your life. In other words, your external factors. And two, a process of reaction and interpretation that happens within you, your internal factors. This self opts to shape you into a non-wave-making conformist. Just take it. Don't make trouble. Just take it. This conforming definition of you may be convenient for the world, but it can leave you frustrated and lacking hope, passion, and energy. In order to disconnect from this fictional self and reconnect with your authentic self, you must understand how both sets of influences, external and internal, have contributed to the life you're living right now, and how those influences can be controlled by you to create what you really want and need. For example, if you have been rejected, external event, and you're really hard on yourself, blaming yourself for not being good enough, internal event, you are altering your connection with your authentic self and connecting instead to some fiction that in truth probably has very little to do with you and a whole lot to do with the other person. Fact. Your fictional self is the source of wrong identity and wrong information. Not only does the fictional self send you false information about who you are and what you should be doing with your life, it actively blocks the information you need in order to maintain the connection with your authentic identity. Relying on information from the fictional self means you're putting your trust in a broken compass. Think of it this way. When you come to a crossroads and you should go right, you go left instead. That is a double bad deal. Left is taking you where you don't need to go, but just as importantly, it is also keeping you from going in the right direction. If you travel 10 miles left when you should have gone 10 miles right, you've made a 30-mile mistake. The 10 miles you went in the wrong direction, the 10 miles you have to go to get back where you started from, and then the 10 miles you have to go to get where you were going. That's the kind of compound error that characterizes life in the fictional self. It explains why you've got to call time out right now and determine where you are. Is the direction you're headed with your life, in fact, the way you want to go? Fact. Your life is not a dress rehearsal. If it's true that there is more to you than you are living, you need to be asking yourself, why aren't I living it? And you need to be asking that right now. You need to be asking yourself how to take control right now. Maybe you're not requiring enough of yourself because you think you're in a trap. You think you have no choice. Maybe you're being held down by a lack of money or opportunity. or by people in your life that would be threatened if you were more successful. Maybe you just don't know which way to push or what to want or reach for. Whatever your circumstance, you cannot let those reasons become excuses. Easy or hard, I'm telling you that you have the responsibility to be all that you can be for your family, for the world. It's your life and the clock is ticking. If you remain imprisoned in self-denial, then days, weeks, months, and years will continue to be wasted. Time that could and would have been amazing and significant in your life. Isn't today a perfect example? Think about it. Like so many other days, it is now over and lost forever. Whatever you did or didn't do, felt or didn't feel, suffered or reveled in, shared or didn't share, it's done. The difference is that by listening to this audio book, by opening your mind and heart to the possibilities of a difference, you are making a difference with this very day. You have started a journey to dig through the clutter of life and the world. You've started a journey back to you. You will soon see that everything you have and have not become is no accident. It is no accident because there are no accidents. Even though you may feel like you are trapped in your own life and circumstance, you are not. You aren't a prisoner of the past or a captive to a life that may feel like it is set in stone. You're going to learn that your quality of life didn't just happen. It is instead ultimately a product of choices you have made both internally and externally. That means that whether you knew it or not, you have had and will always have a tremendous power to determine your life. The problem has been that you may not have known that you were in fact making such defining choices, or that there were even choices to be made. Believe me when I tell you that there are always choices to be made, and you have always made them. In fact, the truth is you cannot not choose, even if you wanted to. You cannot not choose because not choosing is itself a choice. This process of choosing and trying not to choose sometimes happens in an almost invisible, imperceptible fashion. Your mind is so busy processing every minute of every day to such a degree that if it were all conscious, it would just be overwhelming. Either way, mysterious or not, overwhelming or not, you are about to break the code. We're going to slow things down, and you are going to stop taking wooden nickels when it comes to what you have been accepting and settling for about you. There is a truth and clarity that is available to you, but it can only come from getting real about you and ultimately reconnecting with your authentic self so that you can make yourself the star in your own life. Now, don't lock up on me here thinking, "I hear you, but I'm stuck." You have no idea how long and stubbornly I have been where I am and what I am. Yes, I do know. This deal does take a lot of courage. I'll bet that just like me, there have been times in your life when once you finally woke up to something, once you called BS on it, once the light bulb came on, you were stunned that you had been suckered for so long. Well, boy, is that about to happen to you big time. But be honest in answering everything I ask you to think about and deal with, and I mean really honest. Just keep listening, doing the work, and being honest. That's all I ask for now. The change that has to happen in your personal truth, your self-concept, in order to maximize your life, comes totally from the inside out. That's a good thing, really. Think about it. You can't change the world, you can't change its agendas, and you can seldom change those in your immediate circle. What you can change is the manner in which you engage your world and everyone in it. When you move your position on you, when you reopen the data window on who you are, when you begin to reevaluate your concept of self and discover new options, new capabilities, and recognize new control, then you begin to focus on your authentic self, which is real, instead of your fictional self, which is not real. Again, the good news is that the only person you need to successfully get the authentic part of yourself uncovered, back in focus, and back in control is you. I intend for this audiobook to bring you face to face, eye to eye with who you truly are. I intend for you to meet yourself perhaps for the first time and discover every unique gift, skill, and ability that has been bestowed upon you, however deeply buried it may be. I intend for us, through the process of this audiobook, to unearth the true self that is uniquely you. I believe that process will energize and empower you in ways that you cannot even imagine. Let this audiobook serve as your map, your guide for cleaning up your personal truth and self-concept. Let it help you learn the story of you so that knowing yourself, you can begin living by design. Now, in order to do that, you'll need a blueprint. You'll need to have some understanding of the architecture of the self. Unfortunately, in recent years, this architecture has been grossly oversimplified. We're all familiar with the image of the little red devil whispering in one ear while the pristine white angel whispers in the other. There are scores of contemporary references to the awakening of the sleeping giant or letting the inner child come out and play. But things are just not that simple. I strongly believe that either you have been taught nothing at all about discovering and being who you really are, or you have been given a bunch of euphemisms, buzzwords, and psychobabble. The rhetoric may be cute and clever, but it has little to do with the architecture of your life and of your being. That's a deficiency I intend to address. The problem is that the world needs you to behave in a certain way. It needs you to not make waves. It needs you to fit into a bigger plan, a plan that frankly doesn't even begin to consider you as an individual. If you're like most of us, you were raised to be a good kid, and you were rewarded for pleasing those in authority. Not upsetting the status quo has become a priority for you, whether you recognize it or not. You have gone right along with the expectancies imposed by other people. You have actively participated in your own seduction by selling out for what you don't want. You have gotten used to living an assigned role rather than living true to who you really are. You have participated in a devastating conspiracy with you as the unwitting fall guy. How has this happened? Well, I'm betting that you are distracted so much of the time by just trying to keep up with the pace of life that there is little, if any, time to work on you and what is really important to you versus dancing for the world. The expectancies and demands that compete for your time and energy are increasing at a dizzying rate. Result, you've lost yourself, literally in a blur of hyperactivity and diversion. Then there is fear, the fear of change, of stepping out into the unknown. Fear is a crucial issue and one that we will have to address together. Your fears connected to your job, your marriage, or lack thereof, your health, the challenges facing your children, watching your body age, or a million other things that may be keeping you paralyzed, pessimistic, shut down, and insecure. Finding the positives about yourself can be difficult, even when you consciously focus on the task. But make no mistake, at the core of every human being is a uniqueness, individuality, and distinctiveness that demands to be expressed. You are no exception. However deeply your individuality may be currently buried, no matter how lost or non-unique you may feel, you are in there, and I am coming for you. This conspiracy to keep your authentic self buried happens in the dark. It happens in the deep recesses of who you are. Monsters and ghosts work in the dark, just as our fears mount without light. And the fictional life, the mythical life, is a monster. We are going to flip the switch and turn on the floodlights. We will watch the mist shrink away like cowards. You're going to get back your power so that you can serve yourself and therefore those you love. The process of reconnecting with your authentic self will be an incredible experience. Living in daily authentic congruence will yield a joy and freedom of indescribable proportion. The process will be detailed to you as you continue to listen. Expect that you will be immersed in a series of challenges that will require a commitment of both heart and soul. You must be very, very careful not to let others in your life dissuade you from your task. People truly do fear change, particularly when it involves their most personal lives and relationships. They may become especially frightened if what you are doing might involve requiring more from them. If the people closest to you get the idea that the price of poker is about to go up, that you are all of a sudden going to stop being the silent and obedient sheep and start expecting more from yourself and others, they may get threatened in a big way. You can be sensitive to that and help them to a degree, but you must learn to let them own and be responsible for their own feelings. This is about you. It is not about them. We are going to begin by demystifying your past and this concept of self. Once we turn the floodlights on over your self-concept and put your past under the microscope, you're going to hear yourself saying, "Oh, now I get it. Now I see what has been driving my life. More importantly, I now see what I can do to let my authentic self take control." If you're ready to begin this process of discovery, keep listening. For this audiobook to be meaningful, in fact, life-changing, I must operationally define the self. I cannot afford to be vague about it, or you can't use the information very well. Operational definition is a term of art used in the scientific literature, and when you define something operationally, you eliminate any chance for confusion. What it boils down to is breaking down even the most complex concept in terms of its steps. A, B, C, D, and so on. If you know every step or element of that which is to be defined, you are crystal clear about what is meant. Now, I'll confess that, as with a lot of my thinking, I read about this concept in school, but I learned about it, I truly figured it out, in the real world. That means I did something really stupid, but did learn a lesson. One summer, right after high school, I got offered a job of tearing down an old house near my parents' home in Texas. I knew the old man who owned the lot, and he wanted it cleared so he could build a house there. The existing house was a dilapidated wreck. It had no windows or doors, the ceilings had long since caved in, and it was full of old furniture, auto parts, and 55-gallon drums. When he offered me the job, the owner simply said, "Hey, tell you what. You're good at tearing stuff up. I'll pay you $250 to get rid of that old house. Just scrape her off the slab and haul her off." Well, I was in fact pretty good at destroying things and damn proud of it. My dad used to say that he could give me an anvil by noon and I would tear it up by dark. Now there's an art and a skill to being an irresponsible screw-up and being totally worthless all summer. And I was so good at being worthless that I think I was what worthless wants to be when it grows up. In short, this sounded like it was right up my alley, and $250 was more money than I'd ever seen in one place, ever. So, done deal. I would scrape her off. I recruited a buddy who had at least as much destructive flair as I did, and we showed up early the next morning, pumped and ready to go. Much to our dismay, we soon found out that the walls of this 50-year-old house were a foot thick and made of solid plaster. I'll promise you that those walls were harder than any substance known to man before we started the space program. In fact, I think it was in those walls that we discovered titanium. And inside those walls were wood framing, door jams, window jams, and incredibly heavy beams. Looking around this fortress, we realized that at $250, that old boy had really put the britches on us. He was no doubt laughing all the way to the bank over that deal. I was about to wipe that smile right off his face. Neither of us knew it yet, but I was. Well, for 2 days, we attacked that house with sledgehammers, crowbars, ropes, and chains. After 2 days, we were more battered and bruised than the house was. We were getting absolutely nowhere. Now, having always considered myself rather cerebral, I decided that we just needed to work smarter, not harder. So I immediately knocked small holes in the walls, looped chains through the corners of the house, then hooked them onto the pickup with the theory that we would just pull the whole thing down in one fell swoop, load her up, and that would be that. Well, not only did that not work, we burned up two good tires trying. That poor old pickup was crying under the strain as we just smoked the two rear tires. Then the chain broke and we shot like a rocket, careening through the neighbor's hedge and wiping out a pillar on her porch. This did not help the pickup, and we seemed to be tearing down the wrong house. Suddenly, I found I wasn't near as upset as I had been about the fender that had been dented on the neighbor's porch. So much for working smarter. But not being one to give up and wanting to be innovative, I had a great idea. What if we burned that sucker to the ground? I figured if we could torch everything inside the plaster walls, we'd be able just to shovel it out. Next, I figured we could take our already beat-up pickup and just ram the walls until they caved in. I know, but I was only 17. What can I tell you? In any event, we showed up early Sunday morning with 3 gallons of gasoline and doused the entire inside of the house. With one match, that old house went up like you wouldn't believe. Standing there watching the fire do its thing, I remember thinking, this is going to work out okay. An instant later, the fire burst through the roof, caught all the surrounding trees on fire, and burned through the power line overhead. Concerned that the flames were shooting close to 100 feet in the air, some neighbors called the fire department, right before everybody's electricity and phones went out in a 6-block radius. Here came the fire department. They were battling the blaze when it got so hot inside the house that the fire ignited the sewer gas, which promptly exploded. The explosion blew the toilets loose in houses all over the neighborhood. Manhole covers were blown 20 feet in the air. Not good, not good at all. Now here's my point. When that old man that put the britches on us for $250 told us to take her down, he did not operationally define what he meant. If he had been specific enough to operationally define what it was he wanted us to do, there would never have been a fire. He didn't grasp the creativity with which I could be stupid at the age of 17. If he had appreciated my full capacity and had operationally defined getting rid of the house, he might have said, 1, remove the roof with pry bars, tossing it to the ground where it can be loaded and hauled off. 2, strip the framing from inside the house, stack it onto the truck, and haul it off. 3, tear out the floors, braces, and beams, and haul them off as well. He could have gone on and on and on. Instead, with my 17-year-old reasoning, and since he wasn't clear, I just set the neighborhood on fire and blew the sewers for 6 blocks. What that incident taught me was that if you are unclear in defining what you're talking about, there's too much room for error and poor judgment. Not that you're as stupid as I once was, but I don't want to have that problem when we're talking about self-concept. I don't want you trying to freelance when it comes to understanding it. I want to tell you specifically what operations define self-concept so that there's no mystery about what's going on. In order to operationally define the self, I must identify not just what the self is, but how it comes to be what it is. I have to write with verbs in my sentences so that it's clear what you must do in order to make important changes. I must also answer some important questions. First, what are the actual real-world internal and external actions you have done and are doing to create yourself as an entity in this world? Second, what are the thought and feeling patterns that both influence and result from how you see and feel about yourself? Third, what are the behaviors, actions, and reactions that have created the results you have gotten in your everyday life? Results that have, once perceived by you, shaped who you have become. Fourth, what are the choices that you have made that have led to those results that you now live with? And lastly, how do you come to make new choices and new behaviors to create new and more productive results? Now that may just sound like a bunch of psychologist talk, so let's stop right here and get comfortable with the term self-concept. Everybody, including you, has a detailed self-concept. Self-concept is the bundle of beliefs, facts, opinions, and perceptions about yourself that you travel through life with every moment of every day. The problem is that you may not be consciously aware of half of the stuff that's in there. That's a problem. It means you may have powerful beliefs about yourself that you can't challenge or change because you're not even aware that they exist. It means there are an awful lot of things influencing you and how you present yourself to the world that you don't even know about. A person whose self-concept is flush with confidence will engage the world differently than a person whose self-concept is riddled with doubt. What you believe about you, what you treat as your own self-reality, is dramatically important in your plight in life. In fact, it is so crucially important that it is not an overstatement to say that there is a direct link from your concept of self to the ultimate outcome in your life. Based on that bundle of self-relevant and self-generated identifying characteristics, you make a statement to the world. When I say you make a statement to the world, know this. I mean you send messages verbally, behaviorally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and interactively. Only 7% of all communications are verbal, and for every thought you have, there is a physiological correlate. Ask yourself what your other 93% is screaming if your self-concept, which you thought you hid so well, is compromised. Think about your demeanor and your attitude of approach to the world. What is it saying about you? As I have said many times, when you choose the behavior, you choose the consequences. And your choice of demeanor is no different. You are a creator of the responses you get from the world. If you prefer the shrink terms for this, you are a stimulus of those responses. That simply means that the manner and style with which you engage other people is going to determine how they respond to you. When you approach with anger, you tend to get anger in return. When your style of engagement says loser, the world tends to treat you as such. Everybody has his or her own style of engagement. Very few people, however, have ever stopped to consider what their style really is. Yet it is a topic of the utmost importance. Why? Because as you begin to engage the world differently, then all of the responses and reactions you get change as well. What is truly amazing is that this fundamental and outcome determinative element of our life experience so often develops and then occurs both passively and unconsciously. The shaping of your self-concept and many of the choices you have made in life that contributed to that concept and then how it gets expressed may very well have happened with little or no appreciation of the gravity of what was going on. You may have sent messages that said you would passively allow the world and all the people in it to assign you roles that you wouldn't have chosen in a million years. And so they did. With enough time and repetition, those roles, inherited because of the statements you made that invited their assignment, ultimately became so embedded in the fiber of your being and personality that they seemingly consume you. We all recognize, for example, that beauty truly is in the eye of the beholder. Then why in the world would you give your power away to some random beholder? So some boy or girl in school did not think you were cute and funny and worthy of dating. So what? As the old saying goes, nobody died and left them in charge. Yet you may have dragged that experience or some other just like it around with you for many, many years and not even been aware of how it was affecting you. I will give you a clue as to my thinking. I think there's a high likelihood that there's been a whole lot less conscious self-determination in defining who you are and a whole lot more input that you have automatically adopted. Suppose I ask you to evaluate each item and decide whether to keep it or pitch it out. You might pick up each thing, look at it, and say something like, okay, this part of me is where I really worked hard and did well in school, and I'm proud of that. That stays. Okay, now this piece right here is where my dad, who never had a happy, peaceful day in his life, constantly criticized me and told me what a piece of scum I was. Well, I'm throwing that out. I'm not going to keep that. But people don't do that. They don't say, how did I get where I am? Those things inside the self are just there. People don't evaluate how they got there. They're just there. That's an attitude that I flatly reject, and so should you. That's why I want to demystify every bit of your self-concept. My goal is to help you look in to the vessel. Ultimately, I want to empower you to walk out of your history. You hear people say things like, you've got to rise above your raisin, or you can't be a prisoner of your past, or whatever. But those sayings are too general and abstract to be of much use. They demonstrate why I say the self is often discussed, but seldom understood. It may be more helpful to think of the mechanics this way. The past reaches into the present and programs the future by your recollections and your internal rhetoric about what you perceive to have happened in your life. Looking at this formula, you'll have some idea of the roadmap we'll be following. You'll see that if you're serious about rising above your raising, if that is going to be an action step in your life rather than just a trite expression, you'll need to get real honest with yourself about what that raising was. But even though it is vitally important for you to know your history, you'll always want to keep your eye on the ultimate goal. Know your history so you can walk out of it. The only reason that you need to evaluate where you've been is so you can make the appropriate decisions about who you are and where you're going. But if you're really honest with yourself, don't you admit that at least occasionally you do seem to know or at least think about the possibility that there's more to you than you are living? More ability, more joy, more peace? Okay, so you may not become a movie star or a world leader in the sense of having the prestige of the world stage, but you can become a star, the star of your own life. You can, you should, and you will. Fairly exciting concept, don't you think? However grandiose it may sound, I believe that this world was designed with you in mind. I believe that you have a special place in the order of life, a particular role to fill. And yes, it is one filled with vision, passion, and power. So hang on and get ready to get way more consciously into your own life. Don't feel selfish or egotistical because you're saying, I want more. If you were fully in touch with your authentic self, you wouldn't be apologetically thinking, hey, it's just me, no big deal. You would be thinking, hey, this is my life we're talking about, and I want my shot. I want to be the star in my own life. If you're not quite ready to say that yet, then trust me enough to let me say it for you. But you also need to know that every silver lining has its dark cloud in the middle, and this one is no exception. You have a duty, because it is true that to whom much is given, much is expected. Whether or not you feel like it right now, I promise you that you have been given much. So guess what? From you, much is expected. Now, to make this ride through your self-concept a little smoother, we need a working vocabulary, key terms to apply along the way without the need for further explanation. For starters, let's revisit the two big categories that were mentioned just briefly earlier, external factors and internal factors. It is in the development and interaction of these two categories that the self-concept is created. As you've already seen, external factors are events, experiences, and consequences that shape your self-concept from the outside. They are the myriad of different occurrences that influence how you perceive yourself and how you engage with the world. Some of the most powerful external factors are those I call defining moments. Your defining moments may include episodes of trauma or tragedy. Maybe they are instances of victory or perseverance. The point is that those few moments, a surprisingly small number, may well have shaped the entire rest of your life. You have also made a number of critical choices. I don't mean what to wear each day, where to have lunch, what TV shows to watch. These are the routine choices of everyday life. Reflecting on your personal history, you should also be able to identify a handful of critical choices, choices you've made that have shaped the remainder of your life. As with your defining moments, those critical choices can teach you much about who and how you have become who you are. Along with your defining moments and critical choices, you have also encountered a small number of pivotal people who have shaped you both positively and negatively. Identifying who those people are and what role they played in forming your personal truth and self-concept will be a key element of getting in control of your future life quality. You will recall that your self-concept is impacted by another set of factors as well, the internal factors, reactions that you create within you in response to the world. Internal factors encompass the things you tell yourself, the things you believe about yourself, all of the internal dialogue that shapes your self-concept. These internal factors comprise the content of your personal truth. This category of internal factors recognizes that there is no reality, only perception. What is true about you in your mind, you will live. If you believe that you are inferior, inadequate, worthless, incompetent, you will live down to that truth. If you believe that you are the opposite of all that, you will live up to that truth. As we prepare to lift things out of your vessel of self, examining each one, let me introduce these factors in a little bit more detail. Getting familiar with the names of these powerful factors now will smooth your journey to reconnecting with your authentic self. First among the factors is locus of control. Locus of control asks, where is the source of my power? Where is the source of responsibility for the events that happen in my life? Generally speaking, people's locus of control is either external or internal. If your locus of control is external, whatever bad happens, you take no ownership of it. Whatever good happens, you take no ownership of that either. Whereas a person with an internal locus of control operates from a self-concept that says, anything bad that happens is my fault. Anything good that happens, I deserve credit for. Internal dialogue is the conversation that you have with yourself about everything that's going on in your life. It has several characteristics. Number one, your internal dialogue is constant. Number two, your internal dialogue happens in real time. That is, it happens at the same speed with which you would say the actual words if you were speaking them out loud. And number three, it provokes a physiological change. As a result of every thought you have, there is some physical reaction that goes along with it. Another internal factor is labeling. Humans have a need to organize everything, including each other, into groups, subgroups, classes, teams, functions, and the like. We tend to categorize ourselves and others under certain headings or labels. I repeat, we attach labels not just to other people, but also to ourselves. Whether these labels are wrong or right, fair or unfair, they have a powerful influence on our perception of self. As you will see, you live to the labels that you apply to yourself. The next internal factor is one I call tapes. Tapes are the things that you have come to believe at such a deeply ingrained, overlearned level that they have become automatic. Tapes are values, beliefs, and expectancies that constantly play in your head and program you to behave in a certain fashion. As contrasted with a label, I'm a loser, a tape has a context. As you go into a job interview, you say to yourself, I never get the good job. When you're trying to get the cute girl or guy to go out with you, you're saying to yourself, I never win because I'm never interesting. A tape has the power to set you up for a specific outcome. Often that outcome can be defined by the beliefs, thoughts, and mental rules that bind you to your labels. I call these mental rules fixed and limiting beliefs. Fixed beliefs are beliefs you have about yourself, other people, and the circumstances in your life that have been repeated so long that they've become entrenched. They are highly resistant to change. Limiting beliefs are beliefs you have created specifically about yourself that cause you to limit what you reach for and therefore what you achieve. The problem with such beliefs is that they cause us to close the data window. That means we are resistant to or refuse to accept any contrary positive information because it is simply impossible for you to believe. Now, allow me to share with you an episode from my own family life which will frame these concepts in real-world terms. After my dad died some years ago, Robin and I invited my mom to come live with us. Everything was going to be set up just right for her. Robin and I were determined that after a lifetime of hard work, keeping house, picking up after her kids, tending to the yard, and being devoted to her family in every way, Grandma, as we called her, was going to get the royal treatment. Every day, a housekeeper came in to make her bed. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner were ready and waiting whenever she wanted without her having to lift so much as a finger. Her job was simply to enjoy it and to tell us if she needed anything. Well, after about a year of this, it became clear to me that she wasn't enjoying it. The spark had faded from her eyes. She seemed to just shuffle from room to room, listless and withered. "Grandma," I said to her one day, "you don't look okay. Is something bothering you?" Tears welled up in her eyes. Finally, she said, "I miss my house. I miss my life. There's no carpet to vacuum, no bed to make. I haven't got a yard to mow or a garden to take care of. There's no purpose for me. I have no reason for being here." When she said, "no reason for being here," it was clear to me what she meant. She meant, I have no reason for being in this world. Well, we remedied that situation in a hurry. Once again, the family gathered, this time to help Grandma relocate to her very own little dollhouse in a busy, hustling, and bustling neighborhood close by. We made the switch, and you can try going over there, but you may not get much of a visit. Grandma will probably be too busy pushing a mower around her little yard at full throttle, smoke billowing out of the machine, or else you'll find her whacking away at some weed that dared to intrude among her rows and rows of flowers. And the activity around her house only hints at the changes in my mom. She is a completely different person. Please understand, she would be the first to tell you that she still misses my dad and that she deeply appreciates the fact that my wife and I gave her a place to be while she came to grips with her life-altering loss. At the same time, she has carved out for herself a life that she loves. 20 years seem to have fallen away from her. There's a light in her eyes, a spring in her step. I could swear her IQ jumped by half as her mind got active again, and she definitely got her sense of humor back. The move to her own place has completely transformed her. My mom's experience illustrates some of the terms that we've been talking about. Terms you need to become familiar with before we start examining and reorganizing your self-concept. The first thing to observe is that in my mom's life, there was a defining moment. My father died. Few things in life create as much upheaval and change as the loss of a spouse. Secondly, once the defining moment had occurred, my mom's internal factors kicked in as she began interpreting what had happened in her life. Her conversation with herself, her internal dialogue, probably sounded something like this. "Joe is gone. He was my partner, my support. I can't make it on my own. There's no way I can take care of myself." Next, she made a critical choice. Having experienced the defining moment and begun the internal dialogue, she arrived at this decision. "I will allow myself to be taken care of. People want me to do it. They expect me to do it. They love me and they mean well. They probably know what's best for me at my age. I don't really want to give up my independence, my home, and my things, things I spent my life acquiring, but I have no choice. I'll miss my furniture, my pictures, my privacy, but I have no choice. I'll do it. And what was her result? The outcome of this sequence, defining moment, internal dialogue, critical choice, was a prolonged gloom, month after month of confusion, unhappiness, and self-doubt. She was living to a fictional self, created and imposed upon her, with the best of intentions, by loving relatives, and by her own internal dialogue. Look, let's be honest. Life is not a success-only journey. And sometimes these unwanted results can shake our faith and make us doubt who we really are or even why we are. But here's the deal. Knowledge is power. I want your experience of this audiobook to be a leap into knowledge. I'm going to present you with what I hope are a lot of extremely thought-provoking questions designed to bring you back into contact with your authentic self. By answering the questions honestly and thoughtfully, you will begin to exercise the real power that comes with the courage of honesty. You will learn that you cannot be who and what you are unless you have a lifestyle, both internally and externally, that is designed to support that definition of self. To sum up, you have a self-concept, and I want you to know how you got it. It didn't just happen. You entered this world with certain core qualities and characteristics, but almost immediately the world began to write on the slate that is you. You have been both an active and a passive participant in its creation. To some extent, your self-concept was forced on you by others, and to some extent, you have just automatically accepted it, even elicited it. Together, let's find out what your self-concept really contains. Let's challenge every message you have ever been given about yourself and discard those messages that are toxic. And let the destination that we're traveling toward be this. From here forward, your external and internal factors will be affected by you instead of the other way around. You may be asking yourself, how does anyone wind up stuck in a life that ignores what, given the choice, they would want to have? Well, that process begins with the external factors that I briefly introduced earlier. We humans are social beings. I suppose that is both good and bad, because others can sure come in handy when we're lonesome, but they can also be a real big pain in the neck. And when those pain in the necks stop being supportive and start becoming a problem, they can dramatically change who we are, depending on their power and relevance in our lives. Hear what I said. They change who we are. Things that happen on the outside get to us on the inside. External events, once internalized, leave scars that can last a lifetime. Life can be cruel, and when it is, your authentic self, which might have otherwise been doing just fine, is altered, and that's not good. Your authentic self may have started out solid and pristine, like a new car sitting on the showroom floor. It was bright, shiny, and well-constructed, not a scratch on it. If that sleek and perfect car were allowed to remain in the safety of the controlled environment of that showroom year after year, it would still be in pristine condition 5, 10, even 50 years later. But once you drive that car out the door and it begins interacting with the world, it is subjected to the forces and demands of a life that takes a toll. It starts to show battle scars, the wear and tear that comes from being out there. After years of being subject to door dings, a blazing sun, bone-jarring potholes, fender benders, and maybe even catastrophic collisions and wipeouts, it's hard to look at that car and even imagine that it was once the same shiny and solid automobile that sat on the showroom floor. But it was. And even a 30-year-old beat-up jalopy can be restored to its original condition. I'm not saying it's easy, but you sure do have something when you get through. Now, you may feel like a New York City taxicab with more door dings, dented fenders, and chipped paint than a demolition derby winner, but you can find your way back. You may have hit a million potholes along the way. You may even have had a catastrophic collision with life. But knowledge is power, and we're going to break your life down so you know exactly when and where your authentic self took its hits. Don't be overwhelmed by thinking about trying to sift back through and analyze your entire life, because it's not necessary. With the help of a few simple but penetrating exercises, we're going to focus on that select set of external experiences that will give us an absolute blueprint to your current concept of self. As I alluded to earlier, we're going to focus not on your entire life, but instead on three categories of events. Here's a shocker. Social scientists tell us that the entire origin of your self-concept, and therefore the determination of who you ultimately become in your life, can be traced to the events of a few precious days and the actions of an amazingly few key people involved in those happenings. I'm telling you that out of all the thousands of days you have lived, out of the thousands and thousands of choices and decisions you have made, and out of all the thousands of people you have encountered, the basis of your entire life and who you have become can be boiled down to 10 defining moments, 7 critical choices, and 5 pivotal people. If you think about that for a minute, it's not as outrageous as it sounds. An airline pilot once described his job as hours and hours of total monotonous boredom, punctuated by moments of stark terror. Isn't that your life? Days and days of routineness and monotony, all of which has little impact on you or anyone or anything, punctuated by defining, critical, and pivotal happenings, some that take place in the blink of an eye. Scary thought, I know. But good or bad, that's the deal, and we have to get real about it to understand and take control of your self-concept. Some of your 10 defining moments, 7 critical choices, and 5 pivotal people have provided positive input to your self-concept, lifting up and affirming your authentic self. Other defining moments, critical choices, and pivotal people have poisoned that authenticity and distorted how you see yourself. You will be amazed by the clarity you will gain when you identify these key factors, when you mentally and emotionally step back and take a view of life in which the routine, mundane minutiae simply drop away, and you instead highlight just the outcome determinative occurrences and players from your life. It will be like looking at one of those optical illusion magic eye pictures, consisting of thousands of dots of color with an image disguised and embedded somewhere within them. I hate to admit it, but I've never been able to see the damn image until someone points it out to me. Once you take away all the background minutiae, the camouflage wallpaper that conceals the target image, then that image, of course, becomes crystal clear. The 10 defining moments, 7 critical choices, and 5 pivotal people from your life are that image. When you focus on just those key external experiences, the origin of your self-concept will be revealed to you with shocking clarity. In thinking about your most important external experiences, I want you to be especially sensitive to and on the lookout for a particular kind of life experience and associated consequences that may have had a hugely powerful impact on your life and your self-concept. I'm talking about what I call psychic disfigurement. Psychic disfigurement explains how something that happened to you in the 5th grade, for example, can affect you when you're 42 years old. If there is some possibility that it plays a part in your self-concept, now is the time to begin thinking about that possibility. Psychic disfigurement can best be understood through the analogy of a burn to the skin. When people are traumatically burned, often the incident itself is over almost as soon as it began. There may be only milliseconds between the skin's first contact with the flame, acid, or other agent, and the time when both layers of skin, as well as the underlying tissue, are completely destroyed. Considered in one way, the injury is over.